Hello and welcome to the Heads and Volleys podcast with me, Lee Dunn.
In this episode, I am interviewing a San Francisco Youth Soccer board member and volunteer coach, Heather Wilson. She has had her army of four players joining in the player clinics that I've been running with San Francisco Youth Soccer for the longest time since I've been there, really. And they go from fourth grade, so little Andrew was originally a second grader, all the way up to Izzy, who is playing in high school. And all of the teams have experience playing within San Francisco Youth Soccer. And Heather's one of our, she's a dynamite volunteer. So I'm really excited to not only pick her brain a little bit about what she does and how she sets up for the season, but also uses as a platform really to thank her, because she coaches multiple teams. She's involved in multiple teams that she's not even coaching and helping them administratively. And without people like Heather, the game doesn't grow and the opportunities for players, they don't exist. And so I'll start this episode with a huge thank you to Heather for her work and her commitment to youth soccer and to San Francisco Youth Soccer. And we'll jump right into Heather Wilson.
Hey, Heather.
Hi, Lee.
How are you?
Good, and you?
Doing well, thank you. Thanks for spending some time with me.
Yeah, of course, yes.
How long have you coached for? How did you get into it, really? And then how many seasons or years has it been for you?
So I started doing it, I mean, it must be about 6 years now, I think. And I started dipping my toes into it when there were Isabel's team. And then as the boys started playing, I started getting more and more involved, and I realized I enjoyed it and was decent enough at it that it was worth doing. So, yeah, it was a little accidental, but it was basically through the kids. It wasn't that I had any overriding ambition to become a soccer coach, but up until the end of last season being fall 2019, I was still coaching assistant coaching Isabel's team, which was a travel team, U16 travel. As of what would have been this season, she would have been playing with Vikings, so I would have had no more coaching responsibilities for that one. So I would have been helping a little bit with the Matthews Upper House team, 017 boys, and then the two rec teams, fifth grade and third grade.
So you're on the field almost every night of the week?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was a lot. Yeah. And then dashing from place to place on the weekend.
Let me ask you, do you prefer coaching boys or girls?
I think I really have a preference. I like with the girls teams, it tends to be a little bit easier for them to have that bonding and that support and teamwork, whether it just seems to come easier to them to support each other in a really uplifting way. And I think, obviously it depends on the characters you've got either way, right? Because you can certainly have girls who aren't as supportive, but I often feel with the boys teams, you just have to work a little bit harder on that side of things in terms of being a good teammate. So, but then, yeah, no, I really enjoy it. It's fun to be out there with the kids, and there's wonderful satisfaction in seeing them on a soccer field attempt to and sometimes pull off exactly what you've just been coaching.
So that leads me then into a question about the season and a focus, or how you approach the season, how you kind of set up in terms of what you are doing for individuals and for the team, or if you have like a certain way that you want them to play or certain objectives for everybody to achieve.
Yeah, I mean, so I was thinking about that, because it obviously varies quite significantly based on the age, based on whether or not they're a recreational team or a competitive team. And also, I mean, with the third graders next year, they'll be in fourth grade. So they're going from seven aside to nine aside. So that almost necessarily means that there'll be a focus, at least on the beginning, of making sure they understand how to play that different setup with more players, right? It's going to be a little different, and they need to be a little smarter in terms of, you know, where they are on the field, because
four extra bodies on the field.
There's extra bodies on the field, and also just, you know, how you stay involved, even though maybe you're a defender and the ball's all the way up there, right? That doesn't mean you're not shifting. And yeah.
Do you have like a structure that you try and have defenders, midfielders, forwards play, or a team kind of style of play? Do you have any of that you have in place for your players and for your teams?
Yeah, I mean, with the 9v9, the structure that I really liked, I messed around with a few different setups for Matthew's team when I coached at that level. So we have three across the back,
okay,
and then a holding mid, an attacking mid, and a forward, and then the two wingers on the side.
Okay.
We just kept having the problem that we were losing connection between the defense and the midfield, and we just kept having spaces in the center. And as much as we tried to tell the kids to like fill in the gaps, and it's just hard. And I think, again, I don't know if it's more of an issue with boys than girls, but a lot of the boys were very attacking minded. And so if we were on the attack, the entire midfield would tend to push right up. And so you have that hole. We lost possession, right? It's, everyone's running in our defense right now, and everyone else is, you know, as much as they're trying to get back, they're on the wrong side of the ball. And yeah, we really struggled with trying to have the kids conceptually understand that if you're on the attack, that doesn't mean our entire forwards and our entire midfield should be up in the box, right?
So do you have a secret? Do you have a key thing that you do to help teach them that, or to help give them a reference point for that?
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly that changing that structure for us was the biggest thing, so that someone actually now knows that he's the holding midfielder.
Right.
And so because he conceptually knows I'm the holding midfielder, then that gap then gets filled in very naturally in between our defense and our attack.
And this is what a holding midfielder does.
Yeah, and this is what a holding midfielder does, yes.
Now, when you set up for the team, do you focus, or as a coming season, is your focus individuals? You focus on the team as a whole? Do you have individual kind of goals or team goals? How do you set up in terms of kind
of... Yeah, so I'll back it up a bit. Because I was going to say that I've got there's three sort of main sort of principles that we would aim to achieve in a season, which are very, very vague, high level, if you like. But so I think the first one was that the kids should enjoy the experience, right? So I think, you know, that sometimes gets lost a little bit in the coaching, right? But it should be something the kids enjoy doing. So they want to come to practice and they want to be at the games and they actually enjoy it. So that's always been a really important thing for us. And I honestly think it makes me really happy. Every so often when a parent will say, oh, my son's really mad at me because I booked a doctor's appointment during your practice time and he's really annoyed because he's going to miss practice. And I'm like, yay.
Perfect, yes.
You want them to be annoyed that go practice, you know what I mean? So that would be the first thing. And that doesn't mean, you know, that they're all running around goofing off, right? But you're trying to make sure that practice is not just the drills and the dry stuff, but there's a big piece of it that's really worthwhile and enjoyable, so the kids are invested in it. I think we've really tried to have as a goal that every individual player should be a better soccer player at the end of the season. So really making sure that no matter where, you know, if your player is one of the stronger players or one of the weaker players, every single player ends the season as a stronger player than they started. And that's going to look a little different for every player, mm-hmm. you know, whether or not it's, you know, you're working on just understanding, like, because some of my stronger players, really, the thing they most need to work on is understanding when to try and keep the ball at your feet and when to distribute. You know, you work on different stuff with different people. And so the idea is that every kid should be a better player. And I think that's really helpful, because if you have that in mind, then you play every kid and you really make sure they get playing time. Mm. Because no one gets better sitting on a bench watching other people play.
Yep.
I mean, and there is stuff they can learn when they're watching people play, but and then, you know, the team ideally should be playing better soccer at the end of the season than they were at the beginning. So one thing we really tried to do, Tony and I, is to take the pressure off the win-loss record, and try and have the kids understand that, like, a loss is not necessarily a bad thing, because when they play against stronger teams, they actually learn a lot. It can be really hard to see, actually, if you're much the stronger team, it's actually hard to see the weaknesses, because...
Yeah.
Right? And so to try and have that mindset for the kids, that playing against stronger teams and losing is not... It's not a bad thing, right? Because they're growing through doing that, and we're seeing what they need to do. And also, I mean, I'm sure you've been there where there's just been like one, the team's played really well and then like one thing has happened and they've let a goal in, right? And they've ended up losing the game, but they've actually played really well.
Yes. I'm all too familiar with that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I felt like the girls team did it so often where they would play so well and then we'd have that one moment and boom.
You made down a goal. Point too about the idea of wins and losses being like a determining factor on a success for a season is so the entire season's a failure. Imagine if you talk about the kids winning their first and only game for this season. Imagine if they lost the entire season. If we're going to frame it that way,
right? Yeah. I mean, it can be really easy to fall into the trap of thinking that that's what makes a successful season, right? The winning and the losing. And for sure, like it's definitely, as a coach, it's more fun to win the games than it is.
Yeah.
But to younger teams, actually, when I would first start coaching, I often would send a note to the parents just to say, in terms of the selection, that especially on the younger levels, I wasn't necessarily selecting the team to win that individual game. I was selecting the team so that by the end of the season, the team would be winning games and would be a better team. And just to let them know that, you know, maybe they would be looking over at some point and say, well, Y is sitting on the bench right now. Why is Y on the bench? If she just put Y on the field, maybe we could win this. And I said, no, trust me, if you think that and you're actually right, I know it too. But maybe B has not played as many minutes yet, right? And I want B to be a better player by the end of the season as well, so we have a stronger team. So you're not necessarily coaching to win individual games, right? You're coaching to have that stronger team at the end of the season.
And like you said, if this individual is having success and this individual is developing, then if we really look at the big picture for why they're playing soccer at third, fourth and fifth grade, right, is really, or any grade really, is to be able to come back and play again because they like it. And
yeah, it is. Yeah. And you know, at the end of the day, a team is never going to be that great if you're only focusing on developing your strongest players. I mean, I will say when we get to the 9v9 and 11v11, I will say to, like, because we don't necessarily do even playing time at that point, but the way we do for the younger grades, the second and third, but the intention there, what we usually do there is that we will substitute our forwards and our midfield a little bit more than our defense, because those are the positions that are more likely to get a little gassed.
Now, do you find that you have players typically playing in similar positions as they get older? And at what grade do you find that more so?
So second and third grade, I firmly believe that you should still be having them play every position as much as you can. Typically within a game, I'll try and have, I mean, it's not perfect because you're trying to also balance it. If you've got 11 players and give them mostly even playing time and all the rest of it. But, you know, typically, you know, it'll be, you'll be in the forward position when you're for your three or four periods when you're out there, and you'll be in a defensive position. I think fourth grade, we tend to still move it around a little bit, but we start to see where players really are most comfortable and where they're most instinctively able to play.
Yep.
And by fifth grade, we're mostly sort of settling in, I think, to positions a little more, which actually probably is still even a bit young, but I mean,
players will tell you though, and I think you probably the same thing too. A player will tell you that they are uncomfortable playing as a striker or as a defender. Mm-hmm. Or they don't want to. And if we're really looking at players and loving the game, they feel an abnormal pressure or they don't want to make a mistake or any situation that a kid may struggle with, I think that we can sacrifice this idea of them playing every position when now they have already told us where they're comfortable playing and where they're more having fun.
Yeah, no, I think that's fine. I don't know. It's like everything else, right? There's the trade-offs and the balance, but there's definitely something to be said as well for a kid really understanding how to play a position and feeling so comfortable out there because they know what they're doing and they know, they know what's expected. And I think for most of our players, most of them have played most positions as they've gone through. So, because I think the thing you can sometimes find as well, if someone has only ever played in a defensive position, you know, they sometimes will see a striker seemingly have plenty of time and a nice big net to kick it into, and they'll see that ball go wide and they'll be like, aww, right? Because they don't understand what it's like to be in that position and trying to get that shot off. So it's helpful from that perspective too, to have had them play every position. So yeah, at least at some point, right? So they have some understanding of, or even what it feels like to be out on the wing wide open and not having that ball pass to you, right?
It's a good lesson to learn for sure, yeah.
Whatever it is, right?
Just a huge thank you to Heather, as you can hear from the comments of just how she sets up for a season. And it's a constant focus on the individuals and their fun, as she kind of pointed out with her three objectives for the season of fun and then individual and then team development. It's, yes, we want to win. And yes, there's all of these components that fill our experience of soccer with things like winning and having successful seasons, as she mentions, with the cancellation of our season due to COVID-19. And we had one game in the season. So technically her kids were winners because they all won their one and only game of the season before we were cancelled. So if we frame it that way, we've had a great season. But as we talked about, that you lose games and suddenly everything becomes about losing, or it's not a good sport anymore, it's not a fun sport anymore. And just her focus on individuals, and they're having the kind of the end of season objective that every player is better than when they started, really sets everybody up for success. It really paints a picture of an individual plan and individual care for those players, and they want to play. And we've always had Heather's teams return into play within the league of San Francisco Youth Soccer, and all they want to do is just play games. And there's any wonder when you listen to what Heather has to say there that's exactly why they want to do it. So huge thank you to Heather. Her commitment to the organization is so much appreciated. And as with all the other volunteers, with Abe Wallen in episode 40 and Hazen Sewell in episode 41, just the commitment from them as volunteers. And I know the game doesn't work without volunteers. So a huge thank you to all of them. More coming from Heads and Volleys, as always. You can keep up with me at Lead on Soccer on Instagram and Twitter and TikTok, which is a barrel of laughs too. So catch me on there and you'll find me more in your podcast feed real soon.